Thanks, guys. I'm really excited because since the day Steve asked me to speak here, I've been under quite a bit of attack. So that tells me that there's someone in this room that needs to hear what I've got to say today. So that's exciting. So basically, we're going to talk today about doing business on purpose. You know, everything you do, you've got to make a decision to do it and have the right attitude while you're doing it. So can I ask in this room, who has actually written down their purpose, whether business or personal? How many hands up? Okay, cool. That's enough. That's a good amount of hands, but we need a hang of a lot more, guys. You've got to be heading towards something, focus at something. So I used to go every Monday morning out to Mirawai and just spend some time with God. And I challenged myself to write down my purpose. This is way back in 2008, and this is reading from my journal. It says, "Lord, I want my purpose to be valuing people. If I leave this earth knowing I've made one person feel valued, I have succeeded." Now, who knows, that's a pretty low target. So is there anyone in this room I've made feel valued? Yay! There you go. I could go out smiling. We're all good. So I was doing the photography at the time. I'd been running my company, Tiger Tiger, for a couple of years, and I was actually a nurse as well. So I was doing that part-time. It was like my safety blanket. I couldn't quite let it go. But a few years before that, I had invested in a piece of land that we had planted a vineyard, and I was a silent investor, like Paul said. So didn't really have anything to do with it. Now, I have to confess, most of the photos I'm putting up today is really just to show off my piece of God zone. They really don't relate to what I'm saying. But so basically, in 2009, we got called to an urgent meeting to be told that we were going into receivership. So we were going to lose this property. Now, here's an amazing tip if you take nothing else. Don't ever invest what you can't afford to lose. Okay, and that's what I'd always been taught. So I'm sitting there in this room thinking, well, this is sad. This is my 6 years' savings while I lived in London that I'd invested into this property. Plus, we had about $3 to $4 million worth of personal guarantees that were on people's homes. So sad, but it wouldn't devastate me. However, I sat there in that room, and there were people in that room that it would devastate. They'd signed their family homes onto this property. So I'm a fighter. I wasn't willing to stand there and be told by these experts at the front that there was nothing more that we could do. So who knows? What you do then is you put your hand up to just do. So do your own due diligence, guys. I hadn't even gone to visit this property. I'd invested my money into something that people had told me was a really good business investment. Not one person in that room had been down to Blenheim to visit this property. So I got on a plane, and that's peak hour traffic in Blenheim. That's actually our road. And I kid you not, I hired the cheapest little car I could find at the airport, and I drove around on GPS, and I could not find this property. Even to this day, the GPS doesn't bring you to us because our driveway is so long. So I turned up at this farmhouse, and I said to these people, I'm from Auckland. Now, rule number one, don't say you're from Auckland. That was a big mistake, and they still call me the Aucklander to this day. So I said, I'm from Auckland, and apparently around here somewhere we own a vineyard. Now, would you believe that this family not only were our neighbours, but they'd sold us this land. And this was their family land, so they were hugging me on the spot because they'd been so devastated to see it going to rack and ruin because no one had been taking care of it. So for them, this was massive that they could meet me. So this is the Blicks, and they're very dear friends of mine to this day. They've actually adopted me so that I've got family down there, and Blue feeds me really well. I've gone up a few sizes. So that was a hands-up moment. Another hands-up moment was to talk to the bank. They were calling in the mortgage. Now, that was massive. We won't go into that one today. That'll be for another day. But a pivotal point for me was hands-up for the council. So we have this beautiful vineyard. Now, who knows that you can't have vines growing in the Marlborough sun without water. So the accountant said to me, look, someone's been trying to get hold of you guys for 2 months. So I rung this lady, and she said to me, so it was 2 o'clock on a Friday, just put your minds there, okay? And I'm talking to her. She's like, I have been trying to get hold of you for 2 months. Nobody has responded to me. I've been emailing, I've been phoning, I've sent you letters in the post. And she said, you lose your water rights at 5 p.m. today if you don't pay for the re-sign fee. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll pay that. Just send me the bank account, I'll put it through. She's like, no, you don't get it. It's 2 o'clock on a Friday, 5 p.m. is your cutoff, and Monday's a public holiday so here in Marlborough, so you can't put the money through. You need to come into the office with a cheque or cash today before 5 o'clock. And now I'm in Auckland. Do you know what this angel, I call her, did? She wrote a cheque out of her personal cheque book. Wow. And she paid that money, and it wasn't a small amount. It was more than a week's worth of wages for her. I was a stranger on the phone, and we have our water because of her. So what I want to say is, who are you blessing? Yeah, I know, right? This entire vineyard is miracle after miracle. But, you know, that was a pivotal point for me because I realized that the management company that I was kind of putting my hand up to help obviously didn't have it under control. So that was the point at which I said to our investors, okay, I'll take over. I don't know what I'm doing. I didn't even drink wine back then. I could probably have told you what a vine looked like, but I mean, I could tell you the stories I could tell you of how I embarrassed myself with the things I said, but anyway, we won't get into those. So here I am saying, okay, I'm going to manage this property. So the next thing to come across my desk was a statutory demand. Does anyone know? Well, my accountant's in the room. He'll know what that is. Anyone know what a statutory demand is? Okay, it's basically like a court order that says that if you don't pay this bill within 5 days, this company will liquidate your company. This bill was for $350,000. So the accountant we had at the time, she said to me, oh, I think this is it. I'm not sure how you're going to beat this one. So I'm like, well, I'm a nurse. We communicate. So I jumped in my car. I Googled it, and I jumped in my car and went up to their head office, which was up in Albany, and I knocked on the door and said, can I see the GM? Now, I'm not sure this is the way it's normally done, but they looked so shocked that they let me in. And I said to the guy, I said, right, Mr. Gurin, you don't know me from a bar of soap, but I tell you now, if you liquidate us, you'll never see a dollar of your money. But if you believe in me, then I promise you, I give you my word, I'll see this debt paid. And I committed to a lump sum and then $2,000 a week. Now, don't ask me where the hang I was going to get the money from, but I figured I'd get the deal first, right? And we did it. We paid that bill off in 5 years. We pulled that through. So, yeah, pretty cool, man, pretty cool. Okay, so the journey progressed further. And so I had a lot to learn, obviously. I had to find staff. I had to learn how to look after vines. We're a large vineyard. We produce 1 million bottles of wine a year. So what I didn't realise at the time is how expensive it was going to be. That that pour there is enough for 20,000 bottles of wine, okay? So we have a hang of a lot of those trucks go each year. So if you'd told me that when I took over running this vineyard, I was needing to raise $2 million to turn us around in those first 2 years, I would have run for the hills. I kid you not, I would have run for the hills. But God knows what we can handle, right? And so he kept these blinkers on me, and I only ever saw 300,000 at a time as a hurdle. And I had that equity in my rental. So I'm like, okay, we can do this, because if all else fails, I'll sell my rental. So we got one hurdle after a hurdle, and obviously I'm here, so we made it. So this was another pivotal point for me, though, because I've got other investors, other shareholders, and so I was obviously getting commitments from them as well. And one of the shareholders committed $50,000, which is obviously not much compared to everything I'm telling you, but it was a large amount for that job. And so I needed that money for the guys. Oh, the guys were pruning. Scott? Oh. There we go. No. Okay. Can you put me through to the next? I'll carry on. So, thanks. So, the day before this money was due to be paid, so we had these guys pruning the vineyard. Yep, go back one. Oh, that's the blinker one. Oh, you got to see that. I love how it, you know, that's a view from over our property. That's one of my amazing staff. But I like that the mule gives you like a blinker look, and it's a cool shot. Where was up to? So the pivotal moment. So this $50,000 from the shareholders reneged upon the next day, and these boys were out there pruning. I had to pay wages for all these men. And I just remember, you know when you've got so much that you're trying to achieve and it's like the straw that breaks the camel's back? And I remember going home that night so vividly, and I got down by my bed and I was just bawling my eyes out, and I said to God, I have been working so hard to pull this through. It was like, you know, you can imagine that you're just trying to, you're fighting so hard to make this work. You're holding it so tight. I was just like, God, I give this to you. Now, don't get me wrong. I'd been praying about this the whole way, but this was a change in my mindset, because I was like, God, this is yours. If we lose it, we lose it. And that was the difference for me. At that point, I was willing to say to him, if we lose the property, it's yours anyway. So use me. But this is yours. Now, I tell you why I felt such a massive change that day. because the tension dropped off and I slept well that night for the first time in 2 years. And it was like I viewed everything from then on with a whole new mindset. It was fresh, you know. It was like, okay, we can make this. So I just want to read a passage of scripture to you from Mark 6. Okay, it says, save me opening my phone, I'll just read it. It says, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up onto the mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake and he was alone on the land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them walking on the lake, as you do. He was about to pass them by, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." Then he climbed into the boat with them and the wind died down. They were completely amazed. I've got a couple of things I just want to pull from this. The first thing is, I grew up in Sunday school where we're told that Jesus loves you and he'll do everything for you, but you would have noticed, as I noticed, that he was about to pass them by. Now, who feels that they're in the rocky boat at the moment and their business, they feel like they're being tossed around by the waves and you're waiting for God to do something? Guys, he was about to pass them by. He wants us to engage with him. He wants us to call him. He wants us to tell him our problems and call him into the boat, okay? And the second thing is that they saw him. They freaked out. There he is walking on the water. Total miracle, right? Total miracle. They saw him when he was at the boat. But guys, that miracle had been happening since he left the beach. And he couldn't see them back there, you know. And sometimes when I'm in, you're being thrown around in the waves, you're just like, well, he's just taking his time from the beach, you know. He's still on his way. And another thing I noticed from that verse this morning when I was rereading it is that right at the beginning, he told them to get into the boat. So sometimes we're in a business situation where you're just like, you don't feel like he's in the boat with you. But if he told you and you know that, then stick to it, guys. Stick to it. So, moving on. So obviously I still had a fight on my hands. We're still trying to turn this vineyard around and I was trying every avenue to sell this fruit. There was GFC at the time. This is back in 2010 and 2009 GFC, and this was the aftermath. We had a glut of wine in the market. The prices had plummeted and the prices I was being offered for our fruit was not sustainable to be able to keep this business afloat. And I got the opportunity to meet with Morisco, which is one of our neighbours. And this was a big opportunity. And I emailed every single person who knew my name. And lots of people in this room would have received this email saying, pray for favour. That was my one request. Pray for favour on this meeting. Now, I know that God does do cheesy, right? This is one of those moments. I walked into this meeting and Brent Maris, who owns this company, this is what he handed me. A bottle of the King's Favour. That was the one. I didn't even know it existed, right? So we've been in business with them for 8 years now and they have gone over and above to look after us. It's just been an incredible relationship. And the first 3 years, we did a joint deal with this guy, Mark Robinson. And Mark's a very humble man who blesses people without even realizing he's blessing them. And I rang him one day because, so Brent was making the wine and Mark was taking it to Australia. It was about 500,000 bottles worth at the time that they'd take over to Australia because, you know, that's a lot of wine for a New Zealand shelf. We wouldn't be able to sell that amount here. We produce, for one of our brands, it's like the whole UK worth of Sauvignon Blanc, so that kind of puts it in perspective. But I rang this guy, Mark, and this is my first year of growing with him. I was like, Mark, I've run into a bit of a trouble. It's November and harvest is April and I've run out of money. And he's like, oh, how much do you need? 200,000. He's like, what amount? 200,000. He's like, I'll wire it to you tomorrow. I'll wire it to you tomorrow. Like, okay, I'm little nurse here. That's like 3 years worth of my salary. And he's just like, no strings attached, no interest charged, no questions asked. He just wired it to me tomorrow. And honestly, and that got us through to harvest, which he was obviously very happy with the fruit. So, yeah. So I've got a question here for you. I love this photo. I've actually just built a little place looking over that view because it's good. Who do you surround yourself with? This is big, guys. Who are you blessing and who are you allowing to bless you? Mark Robinson blessed me without realizing it. I mean, to him, that was probably just an everyday transaction. To me, that was life-changing. And so I'm like trying to be out there valuing people and blessing them, but actually these guys are all blessing me instead, you know? And it's like if you want to bless someone, they actually can't if they don't let you bless them, you can't bless them. So we need to learn to receive as much as we learn to give, all right? So I'm very blessed, and this is all talking about doing things on purpose. You make choices who you surround yourself with. I'm very blessed to have good networks. My family and friends are incredible, and I've got some here today. And right at the beginning when this happened, I joined a life group. Here's Edwin here, Edwin and Debs. They had a potluck dinner on a Wednesday night, and every Wednesday they'd say, give us an update and we're going to pray for you. And I'm sure they were sick of hearing my stories by then, but every week they just kept on supporting me through. And then I joined Ruth and Vic's business life group, and I remember us sitting in Jim and Dee's lounge one night talking about how I had been told we were going to go bankrupt and the prayers, and like even to this day these guys are just, all I got to do is send them a text if I'm facing some hard stuff and they will keep on praying for me. So who are you surrounding yourself with? And Earl's not here, he's had to go back to the other centre, but Earl became my financial advisor at the beginning. He came to this church, and through the business life groups I was going to, I met him, and he said, happy to meet with you and advise you. And so I remember saying to him, Earl, you know, I need to raise more money. How am I going to do this? He goes, well, he's an accountant. He says, well, Kirsty, you just issue a cash call, and then you can issue convertible notes, and then you can do a share issue. And I'm just like, this was such a different language to me. But one step at a time, we made it. And I kept saying to him, ask me about how to look after someone with a kidney transplant, or ask me what settings to put my camera on to get the best light photo for you. But yeah, this stuff was just all new. And then I chose to go to the business life events. Again, you meet amazing people. And at one of those, I was talking to Jan Zander, and I said to her, we're really struggling with our current accountant. We need to step it up a level. And she introduced me to David, who's here somewhere, and he is their accountant. And so he's now our accountant. And God knew that I needed David to come into our world at that point, because we honestly needed to go next level, that this man can do that lots of others were just saying that they weren't quite sure how we go through this, because we've got four LTCs under a partnership and the IRD is frowning upon that now. So what we had to do is we had to amalgamate the four companies without triggering an asset sale, because we had so much depreciation clawback that would have been slapped on us. So we were able to avoid all of those things with David's fabulous guidance. And Stuart, my lawyer, he now comes to our church, to Life. And again, like, we've had prayer meetings before we have big, before we have some meetings. And I've just taken on one of his, another solicitor, I think they call them here, from his firm, who's the son of one of the partners. He's just a young buck, he's in his early 20s. I feel like I'm in that movie Suits, actually, but he's out for blood. So he's on your team and he's up studying it. It's great. So you probably see a common theme through all of my talking here, guys. And what's that common theme? It's people. I've been missing. Oh, there we go. We're going to stay there. There we go. People, this is all my fun crowd on the Vineyard. Gosh, I love working with these guys. When we did that thing from Simon, it's like, you know, whether you're enjoying your job, I'm like right up there. It's just one awesome, awesome place I work in. So the Vineyard is just doing so well at the moment. I just see fresh miracles every day because I'm in horticulture, so it's growth, right? As I say, I've got an amazing team. Now, can I ask who has staff, whether they're your companies or you work for someone? Yep, okay. Your staff want to feel like they're making a difference every day, that they're not just trading a paycheck from you for their time, right? It's up to you guys and us and me to give them purpose, because, you know, there's a big picture here. Some people aren't called to develop the business purpose themselves. It's up to their leaders to give them that purpose. And I challenge you all to go home tonight and make sure that you are giving your staff purpose, because they want to make a difference. You'll lose them. If they're just turning up every day to clip a ticket, you'll lose them. And if you blame them for that, then you need to look at your leadership. So we're growing for some exciting companies now. We can go back to this. So we grow for Villa Maria and we grow for Marta. And we've got our own Mount Base label. We're into our eighth vintage this year. It sells out every year and wins awards every year. So we're quite excited about that. And I've got I'm in negotiations with a new company, which is quite exciting, but I obviously can't tell you. That's a little bit of a secret. I just got to wait for them to improve their terms and conditions before I sign on the dotted line. See, I'm in a favourable position now that I write my own terms and conditions for these companies because they want our fruit. It's incredible, and this is God, you know. So, moving on. I absolutely love the property. It's just flourishing. We've got lambs, beehives, compost, make our own compost, use seaweed. We've got a native falcon. We've got hawks, pheasants, quails. We've got a little owl. He's moved into the tree beside the cabin that I've just built, and I call him Hoot, except when he's hooting at 1 a.m. I don't really like that. And we've got a little fantail called Pinky. He's like my pet fantail. He comes in every morning just to say hello. And a really cool thing is coming from the nurse who didn't drink wine and didn't know how to grow grapes. I now have respect in the industry for having quality fruit, which is just awesome. So I love it. So if you ask me what do I believe my main reason for success is, I would say it's because I'm surrounded by quality people. See, doesn't relate at all, but it's a cool photo. We just finished harvest, actually. I just came back last week. So I believe I'm surrounded in incredible people, which is a choice that I've made to surround myself with those people. People who pray for me, people who encourage me, and people who believe in me. People who aren't going to give me negative feedback when I don't need it. And I'm going to pick on Earl here. So last year we had a phenomenal year. We blew our forecast out to 2019 for our profits. And I was telling Earl, I was obviously very excited, and I even kept pinching myself. I didn't quite believe it had happened, actually. And Earl said to me, I've got a confession to make. He said, when you first came to me, I actually didn't think that you were going to make it. But you know what? He never told me that. Every time, because everyone else in the business world was telling me, this isn't achievable. But Earl had seen the numbers. Earl had seen my books. And so I'm like, oh, Earl keeps encouraging me, so we can do this, you know? And I'm like, so I ring Earl and I'd say, what's the next step? And he'd give me the next step, one step at a time. That's all I could handle at the time. And now he's telling me he didn't think I could, but he encouraged me anyway. Imagine if he had told me what he really thought back then. Do you think I'd be standing here? So again, I ask you, who are you listening to? And if you're in a position of authority, who are you speaking words over, you know? I'm not saying to mislead people, but, you know, speak words of life, encouragement. I'm just going to finish on a couple of cool stories. This guy here with the shirt off, his name is Knuckles. And the name says it all, really. So I got a call from Hairy Dave. Now, don't ask me why we call him Hairy Dave. It wasn't me that named him, but he's our supervisor. He wears these tight little stubbies. He's got these long, spindly little legs, and he's got this beard that he's always going like this with. So he supervises all our labouring crew. And he rang me. He said, look, I've got this guy, Knuckles. He's worked on all the other crews. He gets in fist fights with everyone. He's been booted off every team. And he's just stolen a police car, lost his licence. And basically, he's a good worker, so we want to give him one last chance, and we reckon that you'll probably give it to him. So I'm like, yeah, okay, let's give him one chance. So I get down there in my steel cap boots, and I go out and spend a few days with this guy, Knuckles. And I noticed that he was really detailed with his work. He definitely, as they said, he was a good worker. And so I started saying to him, why are you doing it like that, Knuckles? And he'd be like, oh, and he'd explain it to me. And you know what I discovered about Knuckles? He was an incredible teacher. So after that, because we get backpackers in and all that when we're busy in our labour seasons, so every new person after that spent a day with Knuckles, and he trained them up, and then they came and joined the team. And do you know what? That man, he just needed someone to believe in him. And a couple of years ago, when he moved on to an incredible promotion at a trucking company, he was our assistant supervisor. So, you know, so who are you believing in? Who are you showing encouragement to, you know? Oh, honestly, I saw him at the supermarket the other day, and he came up and gave me great hugs, and he's telling me his kids are doing incredible at school, and what a turnaround. And then another quick story. These boys here, so we've got REC workers from Vanuatu, and I have to say, I've worked hard to manage men. Like, you boys are hard work, I'm telling you. Like, as a younger female, and especially since it was 10 years ago when I started running this, like, the most common questions I get is, whose PA am I, or do I run this for my father? And and older men don't want to be told by a female, especially if they know she doesn't really know what she's doing. So I've had to work hard, and I feel like I've got to that point now, but these boys here, they always call me boss, and so I was like, we're 3 years in, every 6 months we got the same rotation back, which was cool in itself because they requested to come back to us. And so I said to them, okay guys, we're going to move if we can go over and do these young vines. And they're like, oh yeah, okay miss, yeah, yeah. And Harry Davey's like, did you just hear that? I'm like, hear what? They didn't call you boss. I'm like, oh, I don't mind what they call me, Dave. That's all good. We're going to look after the young vines. He's like, no, you've missed it. You've missed it. They called you miss. He said, boss is what they call you when they're told you're their boss. Miss is what they call you when they choose you as their leader. Wow. And that was cool. That was cool. So I obviously haven't done it all right. I certainly haven't. But I'm working hard to try and show value to these people. And there's a Maori proverb that says, what is the most important thing in the world? He tangata, he tangata, he tangata. It is people. It is people. It is people. Thanks, guys.